On this 13th day of December 2011 in San Diego, California, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we are reading from the 6th chapter entitled Dhyana Yoga, text number 31. 631. Sarvabhutasthitam yomam bhajate katvamastitah sarvatavartamanopi sayogi mahivartate. Such a yogi who engages in the worshipful service of the Supersoul, knowing that I and the Supersoul are one, remains always in me in all circumstances. Purport. A yogi who is practicing meditation on the Supersoul sees within himself the plenary portion of Krishna as Vishnu, with four hands holding conch shell, wheel, club, and lotus flower. The yogi should know that Vishnu is not different from Krishna. Krishna in this form of Supersoul is situated in everyone's heart. Furthermore, there is no difference between the innumerable supersouls present in the innumerable hearts of every living entities. Nor is there a difference between a Krishna-conscious person always engaged in the transcendental loving service of Krishna and a perfect yogi engaged in meditation on the supersoul. The yogi in Krishna-consciousness, even though he may be engaged in various activities while in material existence, remains always situated in Krishna. This is confirmed in the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu 12187 of Srila Rupa Goswami. Nikalashrapyavastasu jivan mukta sauchite. A devotee of the Lord, always acting in Krishna consciousness, is automatically liberated. In the Narada Pancharatra, this is confirmed in this way. Dikkalad anavachinne Krishna cheto vidhayacha. Tanmayo vapatichipram jivo brahmani yojayet. By concentrating one's attention on the transcendental form of Krishna, who is all-pervading and beyond time and space, one becomes absorbed in thinking of Krishna and then attains the happy state of transcendental association with him. Krishna consciousness is the highest stage of trance in yoga practice. This very understanding that Krishna is present as Paramatma in everyone's heart makes the yogi faultless. The Vedas, Gopal Tapani Upanishad 121, confirm this inconceivable potency of the Lord as follows. Eko pisan bahudha yo vibhati. Although the Lord is one, he is present in innumerable hearts as many. Similarly, in the Smriti Shastra, it is said, Eka eva paro Vishnu sava vyapi nasangshayaha. Aishwaryad rupam ekangcha suryavat bahudheyate. Vishnu is one, and yet he is certainly all-pervading. By his inconceivable potency, in spite of his one form, he is present everywhere as the sun appears in many places at once. Om jnanatimarandasya jnanandana shalakaya chukshu unmidatam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance to him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, the inconceivable oneness and difference of Krishna and everything else. That's why it is explained in this verse that anyone who sees Krishna in everything and everything in Krishna, he's saying as such a yogi, right? The translating is such a yogi, referring to the previous verse. One who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor he is ever lost to me. So how to understand that Krishna is present in everyone's heart as this supersoul, and yet that supersoul is non-different from Shyamasundar, because in this purport, to text 30, Prabhupada quotes the famous Govinda prayer, Premanjana Chutita Bhakti Vilochanena Santa Sadaiva Ridyeshu Vilokayanti. For one whose eyes are anointed with the salve of love of God, Prem Anjana. Anjana is an ointment for the eyes, and it's prema, the prema ointment. Chudita Bhakti Valochanena, seeing with those eyes of bhakti, the santas, the saints, the devotees. Sadaiva Yeshu Valokiyanti, they always see within their heart whom? Shamasundaram. Yang Shamasundaram Achincha Guna Sarupam, who has whose form is full of inconceivable qualities. Who is that Shamasundar? Govindam. Govindam Adi Purusha. But I thought it was Vishnu was in the heart. Are there two? Is there room for two? Actually three. The individual soul, the super soul, and then now the Shamasundar form is that non-different from the Vishnu form. So the idea is that Krishna appears to us according to how we want to see him. Now in this material world, most people don't want to see him. And so they don't see him personally. They see his energy, certainly. And they can see him as death. He says it in the 10th chapter. Mrityu sarvaharas chaham. I am death. Who takes away everything. You know, for everybody. But especially for the atheist, Krishna appears as all-powerful death to them. But not in his personal attractive form. One has to cultivate that vision. So many of these verses now are talking about seeing, right? Yomam pashyati sarvatra. Text 29. Ikshate sarvata samadarshanaha. The darshan means to see, the seeing of someone. Sees equally. And the yogi sees me in the heart. You see? So the sight is the symbol for all the other senses also. When you become Krishna conscious, all the senses become enlivened. Because all you see is Krishna. Prabhupada quotes one line of a verse from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which says, Iha yasa hari dasi karmana manasa agira nikalashupyavastasu jivan muktasa uchite. Which means that when all of one's activities, iha yasa hari dasi, are simply in the realm of serving in Krishna. Which activities? Make sure we don't forget the karmana, the manasa, and the gira. The senses, the mind, and the voice. You know, those are the three categories of things. When all of those are connected to Krishna, nikalashrapyavastasu, every one of them, nikala means all, then one is liberated even while in this world. Even while in this world of matter, one is in a liberated state called the jivan mukta. Jivan mukta. So, this seeing of Krishna within the heart. Now, what are the symptoms? It's very interesting here. Bhajati, he worships the super soul within the heart of everyone. Now, how can one do that? You know, is he going to go around performing artik to everybody you meet on the street? That's not what's meant. First of all, one has to understand, theoretically, that everyone is a child of God. Right? Everyone has the same super soul in the heart that I have. And so, how does one worship that super soul in the heart? By trying to wake up the souls to the existence of the super soul. There's nothing more pleasing to Krishna than for someone to make an effort to bring another servant out of the darkness and the morass of the suffering of this material world. Krishna says that at the end of the chapter. There will never be nachatasma manusheshu kastin me priya kuttama. Priya means dear. He's referring there to preaching the Bhagavad Gita to the devotees. But ultimately everyone's a devotee. You know? If you only preach to the confirmed devotees, then we'll have three of us. You know? but we three were, and we four were at one point not devotees. Somebody took the effort to introduce us to Krishna. And in that way, they were worshipping Krishna within the hearts of all. That's how you do it. There's a way of relating to everything in a Krishna conscious way. That's the art of bhakti. Even living in this world, one can see everything in relation to Krishna. And the best way to do it with other human beings is to try to give them Krishna as much as possible. Then you're definitely seeing, you know, worshipping. That's what Krishna's saying here. And to see the oneness, right? Knowing that I and the super soul are one always remains always in me in all circumstances. So I, Krishna speaking, that I and the super soul are one. So for the yogis, their if they rise up to a certain ras, it's generally Shanta ras, you know, which is very appropriate for Vishnu, because Vishnu in the heart, because it's just a contemplative service. It's a thinking of Krishna, thinking of the Super Soul in the heart. But there's no kirtan going on. There's no arti going on, you know. All of the other services that are part of bhakti, Krishna bhakti, are not happening for the yogi, at least not yet, right? So he's simply thinking of Krishna. So that form in the heart that's there for everyone is this forearm form with the four elements of kancha. And that's what's being mentioned here. Now, let's look at these verses. By associating with Krishna simply by thinking of him. This is what this verse near the end of the purport, Dikkali. Dikkali means all directions, you know, seeing him in all directions. Then one, Jivo Brahmana Yogi, one is linked to the Supreme Brahman in this way. So just by thinking, you can't do that with an ordinary person. If you try to, you know, this is the love affair is never, you know, I'm thinking of you, you know, meditating on you, Facebook and everything, but you're not really associating with them. You know, it comes and it goes. And it's not the same as actually personal association. But because Krishna is absolute, this thinking of him is wholly equivalent to being with him. This is one of the things. You remember I mentioned that 11th offense that we often don't think about? I don't know if I think I gave the class here. Where the things can be, like we say, that to consider the names of the demigods, such as Lord Shiva or Brahma, to be equal to or independent of Krishna, that's an offense, right? So that equal and independent is actually two different things. To think a name of, that one can chant the name of Shiva and get the same benefits that you get for the name of Krishna, or the name of Chandi or Kali, that's a big offense, right? But also to think that, so that's the oneness, the thing they're equal to, or that they're independent of, means that I need to chant different names, I need to worship different gods in order to really cover all the bases. Because Krishna can't give me everything. Shiva is independent from Krishna. He has his own things that he can give me. You know, I should worship little Krishna, little Shiva, little Ganesh, little Chandi, little Lakshmi, and I'll be covered. That's an offense. Big offense, yeah.
I was just going to say that they get all their power from Krishna.
That's the point. That's the point. But people who are ignorant of that, they don't realize that. But there's another offense that's perhaps most pertinent for us, since I don't think anyone here in this room is really attracted to worshiping the demigods. But another meaning of this offense is to consider that the name of Krishna is different from Krishna. Now, we certainly act that way, right? If Krishna himself is standing over there with Radharani playing his flute, that would be a little bit different, right? But he's there in the holy name. You see? But we don't consider that. When we're chanting our rounds, we're often thinking, this is Krishna. I have an opportunity to associate with Krishna just by listening to this name. Just by fixing my mind wholly and solely on the very name, Krishna. It's equivalent to associating with Krishna. Now, if we chant our rounds with that understanding, imagine how eager we'll be to hear that name, to actually associate with God that way. That's the moving engine. That is the engine of this whole movement. All of this philosophy, I think about this sometimes. If there was no bhajan, if there's no chanting of Hare Krishna, I don't think there would be a Hare Krishna movement. I mean, that's kind of an oxymoron. But it's that chanting, even though we don't understand what's going on, that actual association with Krishna, that's so purifying and enlivening and ecstasizing. Is the word exercise that keeps us going. But if we went in with full understanding, oh, now is my chance to associate with Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare. And to get into the, you know, thinking of that full absorption of that name, that's a different experience. But we reenact the fall from the spiritual world every morning. we're thinking of something else. We think at a certain point, we think something else is more pleasing to think about than Krishna, even involuntarily. It's an effort to think of Krishna in his holy name. That's a sadhana, you know. But just you know, imagine for a moment chanting 16 rounds or 32 rounds or 100 rounds and hearing every syllable, being just drinking it in like pure nectar. You know, nothing else, there's nothing else to think about. Nothing else I want to think about. You know, it's complete, the complete form of Krishna. So that's an offense. It's not an easy offense to avoid all the time, but at least intellectually we should understand that going in. Okay, Krishna consciousness is the highest yoga practice. He quotes the Gopal Tapani Upanishad. Although the Lord is one, he is present in innumerable hearts as many. Okay. He can do that. The name Vishnu means all-pervading. And if you know that, Vishnu means he who pervades everything. So we know intellectually that God is everywhere. Not just in the temple. In everything, in everyone's heart. If you go out of the door and you actually have that vision, that understanding, won't that change the way you deal with everybody? Oh, this person is so unfortunate, they don't realize that the Lord is in their heart. If they would only realize that and learn to hear his instructions, then they'll be saved, they'll be delivered. Salvation, you know, from so many lives of suffering. That's the vision of a devotee, and therefore they become very obsessed, if you will, with preaching, with saving the people, because there's a sense of empathy there. Do you ever hear this phrase, paradukkaduki? I'm sure you must have heard that before. Paradukkaduki? What's it mean?
I've heard it.
That's not true in the tune. That's another one. All right, let's go through some phrases, famous phrases. We'll do chewing the chew too. Paradukkaduki. This is a verse. I think it's either by Raghunath Das about Sanatana Goswami or by Sanatana about Raghunath Das. I forget. I should know. But anyway, paradukkaduki means duki. Let's see if I can analyze it grammatically. Okay, so dukkhi means, I think it's a person who is suffering. Okay, one should be a paradukkaduki, namely, one who suffers at others' suffering, to feel empathy and sympathy for others. Just as the opposite is you ever hear the term, the German term, Schadenfreude? Schaden means suffering. Freude means happiness. To take pleasure in others' suffering. It's hard even to think about someone like that. But that came out of the Nazi era. You know, nasty. Schadenfreude. Just the paradukkasukhi. That would be paradukkasukhi. To be happy at others' suffering. There's a culture, you know, in this so-called culture. These reality shows sometimes, you know, where people are going through so many torments in order to win them $1 million or something, you know. People watch that. And horror shows, you know, so much suffering going on. Well, I'm safe here in my couch eating popcorn. Oh, they're suffering so much. You know, there's a pleasure that comes with that. It's very demonic, but that's it. So they are just 180 degrees... is the devotee, where it's the perfect, you know, expression of it is in Prahlad Maharaj. I'm telling you, this verse and the following verses, two verses in his prayers to Nrisimhadev, that practically can be the mission statement of this movement. Prabhupada obviously took inspiration from these verses. And the first one, Prahlad, now we know what you know the story of Prahlad Maharaj, how he went through so much in preaching to his father. The original, this idea of speaking truth to power, is often a very dangerous thing. You know, throughout history, people who spoke truth to power, the kings, they were off with their head. You know, the whole, you know, Chinese communist thing and the Russian thing. There's no freedom in the press. If you try to speak up, they cut you down, throw you into Siberia, whatever, you know. So it's dangerous to speak the truth to someone who has the power. The people who have the power are often demoniac. So anyway, this is the original instance of that. Here's this little boy, helpless before his powerful father who conquered the universe, and he won't give an inch. You know, his father wants to know, what's the best thing you learned today? The best thing I learned today, father, is that you're the best of the demons. He didn't even call him father. He says, Tatsaru manye, asuravarya dehinam. For the living entity in the body, the word dehinam means the embodied soul. Who is sadasamudvigna diyam, whose consciousness is always disturbed out of fear, because his eternal soul in a material, suffering, temporary body. It's it's an incompatible situation. At a sadgraha, because you've grabbed onto and absorbed a mind in the impermanent. Soul is by nature eternal, but he's always suffering by this mistake. So what should he do? Father, you know, just visualize this little delicate little 5-year-old boy speaking to this powerful demon. Sometimes his eyes are crooked with drink, you know. You know, he's just horrible. So there he is. And he said, give up the house, give up your household life. Leave the kingdom and take shelter of Vrindavan and worship Hari, your arch enemy. This is what he's telling him to do. So, you know, the first time it happened, Hiranyakashipu was just laughing, like, who got to him? You know, this is a little kid. You're the little kid you feel you can mold, you know. Somehow the Vaishnavs got into the school and, you know, preached it to him. So he told his teachers, don't let that happen again, and you fix him up. He wasn't so disturbed the first time. But it happened again and again. So eventually, you know the story. I won't tell the whole story, but Nrisimhadeva comes and kills him, kills Hiranyakashipu. And then Prahlad has these beautiful prayers, wonderful prayers, very important prayers to Nrisimhadeva. And near the end of those prayers, he has these two that are most famous, I think, you know, because they characterize this whole preaching movement. So what he says there, the Naivod Vijay Padadulaktya Vaitarandyas Tadvirya Gayana Mahamata Magna Chitta. As far as I am personally concerned, I have no problem in this world. Now, he's just been, you know, tortured, thrown in a boiling vat of oil. They try to crush him under the elephants. Every way they could think of to kill someone, they tried it with Prahlad. But he failed, you know, and eventually he won. But he says, I don't have any problem. It's not like he had PTSD, you know, from all this or anything. He has no problem at all. Naivod Vijay, I'm not disturbed. Because I've already actually crossed over the boundary between the material and the spiritual world. Why? Because, he says, Vaita Tvadvirya Gayana Mahamrita Magna Chitta. Now just, let's focus on this wonderful phrase. Tvadvirya Gayana Mahamrita. So virya here means powerful. We know the English word, virile, right? So this word means your powerful activities. I can sing about them. I can hear and chant about them. And in so doing, Mahamrita Magna Chitta, I can drown my consciousness in an ocean of nectar. Mahamrita Magna Chitta. And it means great nectar. I'm just singing about you. It makes me completely joyful and blissful, and I have no problem in this world. But then he says, Shoche. Now we should know this word, Shoche. This is practically the first word of Krishna's instructions. Ashochan and Vashochastra. You're lamenting for what is not worthy of grief. Do you remember reading that in the second chapter, Pete? Where the first instruction of Krishna? Yeah, he says to Arjuna, what is Arjuna lamenting about that he shouldn't lament about? You remember?
The death of his family.
Yeah. You're lamenting, right, exactly. You're lamenting about the imminent death by your own hand of your dear ones. He said, don't lament about that. Well, on the material plane, he said, why not? You know? I mean, I have a beloved son, and, you know, this happened in the Bible. Now go and kill him. Right? Well, okay, it wasn't his son he had to kill, but it was his teacher, the grandfather of the whole kingdom, and brothers-in-law, right? So naturally he was, on the material plane, this is a horrible thing. The person who you revere, who's your authority, who's your friend, is saying, oh, now it's time for the battle, and you have to annihilate everyone, you know, a lot of people who you love. And this was just too much for Arjuna. But Krishna said, no, your lamentation is nonsense. It's a very radical statement. And then he explains the rest of the, why that's so, right? So, but here, now here Prahlad is saying, I'm lamenting. But I thought he just said that I have no problem. But now he says, Shoche, I am lamenting. Tato vimakacheta sa indiyata maya sakaya banamudvato vimudhans. I'm worshipping for these great fools and rascals. You know, padadukaduki. Who have turned away from you. Who have turned their back on you. Vimukacheta sa. And indriyata. Their only goal in life is sense gratification. And they're trying to enjoy maya sukhaya. What does that mean, Brandy? You know what maya sukhaya means? You don't know what maya means? Any idea? You know what maya means, right?
Maya means the material world, illusion.
And what does sukha mean?
Sukha, spiritual.
No? There's a pair. Sukha, dukkha? You know, Pete. How are you guys?
You gotta guess, is it with or without?
No. Dukkha and sukha is like, you know, misery and happiness. There's a pair there. Sukha, dukkha, sukha. Pada dukkha, dukkhi, miserable at others' misery. So here he's saying, maya sukhaya, illusory happiness. Yeah? Happiness that really is the source of all misery. That's maya sukhaya. So Prahlad is seeing that, and he's feeling compassion. He's feeling empathy, sympathy. That's his difficulty. That's his only difficulty. So that you see, this is the preaching spirit, right? This is why Prabhupada left Vrindavan. He's in the best place for Krishna consciousness. Just chant Hare Krishna and go back. Leave the body behind. Finish. As all countless others did before him and are doing to this day. But being a disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, following in the line of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, coming in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Gaudiya Vaishnavas don't do that. Real Gaudiya Vaishnavas. They try their best to save others. So that's the next verse. Both of these go together. So what is he going to do about it? So then he explains, Prayana deva muniyo sovamukti kama maunam chadandi vijane naparata nishta. So the first two lines, he describes those transcendentalists who aren't in this mood. He says there are others, for the most part, Prayana deva, O Lord, muniyo, learned sages, but they're not real devotees. They're not devotees of the highest caliber. Rather, they're more or less impersonalists, and they're concerned with their own liberation. The hell with everyone else. So he calls them swavamukti kama. Kama means material desire. So wanting only one's own liberation from this world is a form of material desire. It's not really much different than just trying to get a really comfortable position in this world, right? Which everyone is doing. Oh, it's too hot, it's too cold, let me adjust, you know, let me turn it like this, you know. Trying to liberate oneself from the difficulties of this world, which you can't really do, but you try. But if you know the Vedas and you know all the methods, okay, well, I'm going to, you know, get rid of all my karma, I'm going to avoid all distractions, I'm going to merge into the Brahman, I'm going to get liberation in this way, mukti. You know, I'm going to rise up the Brahman platform. So that's, he says, this is not any kind of really admirable thing. This is svavamukti kama. And for that end, maunam charanti. Maunam means silence. They wander in silence away from all people. Vijane. A secluded place. No distractions. Don't distract me. You know. Naparata nishta. Having no desire or no determination to help others, naparata nishta. So then he conscious, but I'm not like that. Naitad vihaya kripana vimamuksha eko. I'm not going to give up these fools and rascals who have no idea of you and simply want my own liberation alone, vimamuksha eko. Because nanyam tvadasti shadanam brahmato anupashye. I cannot see anyone else but you who can save these souls who are wandering in this world. And therefore, the implication is, therefore I have to give them you. He's speaking to Nisringadeva. He's speaking to Krishna in the form of Nisringadeva. You see how this is so central to the mood of this movement. This is exactly why that it's a Sankirtan movement. And without the Sankirtan part of this movement, believe me, we cannot sustain our devotional service. We have to be part of this mission of trying to save those who don't have any, who haven't been so fortunate. Otherwise, you know, we're not really in the line coming down from Prabhupada. Yeah.
What's to say about other religion, other religious movements that are doing so much preaching work?
Yes, if you observe it, you'll see that what they're basically doing is material. Even if they're you know, trying to spread the gospel so people can be saved and go to heaven so that they can enjoy eternally. Right? It all boils down to that. You know, I mean, this, you know, look carefully at what the final goal is of any of these other religions. And it's always, oh, I'll get my own universe. You know, I'll go to heaven, you know, and be free from those, you know, fools and rascals, those idiots who are in hell. Oh, look at them burn down there. We're up here in heaven, you know, the pearly gates. You see the problem? It's almost like Schadenfreude, Paraduka Suki. We're up here. We've been saved. You guys are... It's like that, the mood. So, but it's all me. You know, even on a spiritual plan. What to speak of? You know, that out and out material welfare work, which, don't get me wrong, is good. It's better than, you know, nothing. But it's not real spiritual work. This is the real spiritual activity is being Krishna conscious and giving other people Krishna, so that he can get out of this world. This world is not a place of happiness. It is not God's blessing that we're rich. No, that's a curse. It's a curse. All of these, you know, this wealthy 1% or whatever they are. Some of them are, you know, are Christians. This is a Christian country. To this day, 90% of people are Christians. You know, but they're all either aspiring. A lot of people are aspiring to be wealthy. You know, some of them are. And they're taking it that, oh, this is a blessing of God that we're wealthy. If Jesus said, you know, to help the poor, you know, and he himself was very, lived very plainly, right, sannyasi. Anyway, it's complete distortion. You'll find that all of these other religions, because the key is, you know, the key element, you can't get away from it, and that is that the soul, the real pleasure of the soul, is in serving Krishna's senses, making him happy. Because we're part and parcel of Krishna. You see? Now we're thinking we're part and parcel of this body, our false sense of ego, the false sense of self, the false ego. So we're thinking, oh, making this body pleasurable is really my goal in life. That's how I'm happy. And it seems to work for a little bit. But the problem is you stay body, totally bodily conscious. And then at a certain point, you know, you're ripped out of the body and given another one to try again. And you're completely ignorant of the real pleasure, of your spiritual pleasure. So anything less than that. Now, as explained in this passage, now coming back to where we are in the Bhagavad Gita here, and the next verse, actually we should read the next verse because it directly pertains to this. How one should see others in relation to one's own body. This is called empathy. Atmao pamyena sarvatra. Samam pashyati yojana.
Samam pashyati yojana.
Sukham vayati vadukkam. Sayogi paramo mataha.
Sayogi paramo mataha.
He is a perfect yogi who, by comparison to his own self, sees the true equality of all beings in both their happiness and their distress, O Arjuna. Purport. One who is Krishna conscious is a perfect yogi. He is aware of everyone's happiness and distress by dint of his own personal experience. The cause of the distress of a living entity is forgetfulness of his relationship with God. And the cause of happiness is knowing Krishna to be the supreme enjoyer of all the activities of the human being, the proprietor of all lands and planets, and the supreme friend, the sincerest friend of all living entities. The perfect yogi knows that the living being who is conditioned by the modes of material nature is subjected to the threefold material miseries due to forgetfulness of his relationship with Krishna. And because one in Krishna consciousness is happy, he tries to distribute the knowledge of Krishna everywhere. Since the perfect yogi tries to broadcast the importance of becoming Krishna conscious, he is the best philanthropist in the world. And he is the dearest servitor of the Lord. Nacha tasman manusheshu kashchan me priyakuttama. Bhagavad Gita 18:69. In other words, a devotee of the Lord always looks to the welfare of all living entities. And in this way, he is factually a friend of everyone. He is the best yogi because he does not desire perfection in yoga for his personal benefit, but tries for others also. He does not envy his fellow living entities. Here is a contrast between a pure devotee of the Lord and a yogi interested only in his personal elevation. The yogi who has withdrawn to a secluded place in order to meditate perfectly may not be as perfect as a devotee who is trying his best to turn every man toward Krishna consciousness. Isn't that what I was just describing with Prahlad? This is exactly Prabhupada's even quoting, you know, from that verse that I just quoted. So that's, you know, that's the ultimate meaning of yoga. It's not simply focused on oneself. Because if you really become Krishna conscious, as explained in these verses, you see Krishna in everyone. And you want them, you want those persons to also see Krishna. Because you know that's the only route to real happiness. Because you've experienced it yourself. You know, that's really what makes a good salesman. I mean, in one sense, we're trying to sell Krishna. I mean, Krishna doesn't need us to sell him. He's already perfect. But he allows us to represent him. In order so that we can also become purified and experience the happiness of serving him in that way. So everyone knows that the best salesman is someone who really believes in the product, right? Who's tasted it or who's experienced it. It can be really convincing. So that's another reason why we should feel a responsibility to become Krishna conscious. Because we'll be better able to serve Krishna by attracting others to Krishna consciousness. So there's double motivation. We ourselves want to experience it, but we also want to be able to present Krishna nicely. So that's it. Okay. So Prabhupada is reiterating this, that the sensitivity. It's sometimes difficult because there's so much pain out there. You know, there's so much suffering when you actually see things as they are. When the veneer of Maya recedes, or you can see through it, you know, and you can see how, you know, yes, you know, like here in San Diego, you know, there's so much sun and so much, you know, the surfers are there. Well, you know, I've been here so long that the surfers who I used to see when I first came here are now middle-aged trying to pay their mortgages, you know, and send their kids through college. But just 22 years ago, they're happy-go-lucky, carefree 20-year-olds lugging out that surfboard and just, you know, and not in care in the world, at least at that time, right? So what happened to that carefree life? It's gone, you know, and it will continue to drain away. There's no such thing as a carefree life in this material world. But people want so much, you know, they're feeling the loss of that really carefree life, which is gambling with Krishna out in the forest. Forever. That's a carefree life, you know. But you can't have it here. But people try to make this kingdom of God without God, and it does not work. So that's our responsibility. Now, Arjun, moving to another section here, where Arjun is pleading that, oh, this, I can't do it. You know, it sounds very good, but I don't think I can do it. So any questions on these previous verses? Discussion? All right, we can go into begin this next section. Arjuna Vacha Yoyam Yogastvaya Prokta
Yoyam Yogastvaya Prokta
Samyena Madhusudana
Samyena Madhusudana
Etasyaham
Napashyami
Chanchalat Vat Stithim Stiram. Arjuna said, O Madhusudan, the system of yoga which you have summarized appears impractical and unendurable to me, for the mind is restless and unsteady. Purport. The system of mysticism described by Lord Krishna to Arjuna, beginning with the words Shuchau Deshe and ending with Yogi Parama, is here being rejected by Arjuna out of a feeling of inability. It is not possible for an ordinary man to leave home and go to a secluded place in the mountains or jungles to practice yoga in this age of Kali. The present age is characterized by a bitter struggle for a life of short duration. Reminds me of the saying, you ever hear, what was the name of that philosopher? I forget, but he said that life is nasty, brutish, and short. Nasty, brutish, and short. It's by a bitter struggle for a life of short duration. People are not serious about self-realization even by simple practical means. And what to speak of this difficult yoga system, which regulates the mode of living, the manner of sitting, selection of place, and detachment of the mind from material engagements. As a practical man, Arjuna thought it was impossible to follow the system of yoga, even though he was favorably endowed in many ways. He belonged to the royal family and was highly elevated in terms of numerous qualities. He was a great warrior. He had great longevity, and above all, he was the most intimate friend of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. 5,000 years ago, Arjuna had much better facilities than we do now, yet he refused to accept this system of yoga. In fact, we do not find any record in history of his practicing it at any time. Therefore, this system must be considered generally impossible in this age of Kali. Of course, it may be possible for some very few, rare men. But for the people in general, it is an impossible proposal. If this were so 5,000 years ago, then what of the present day? Those who are imitating this yoga system in different so-called schools and societies, although complacent, are certainly wasting their time. They are completely in ignorance of the desired goal. So now Arjuna, who's taking the role of every man, you know, this is an every man, in other words, the average person, although he's anything but average. But he's saying, well, okay, this is all very well and good, and it sounds great, but I can't do it. You know, there's no way that I can do this. Even though, ironically, he was proposing at the beginning that he leave the battlefield and go, you know, just beg in the forest. Well, that's the life of a mendicant, you know. But it doesn't say that he would be practicing this kind of yoga. So the main problem is the mind. You know, the mind is very flickering. Very difficult to control, as will be explained in the next verse, graphic imagery. And certainly we have experience of that. You know, any system of yoga involves ultimately controlling the mind, I mean, fixing the mind on this one point, whatever it may be. And not an easy task, not an easy task. And the key for us, as will be explained in, you know, be hinted at and explained in more detail in the next chapter, I hinted at the beginning, is that when the mind is fixed on something that's all attractive, then it naturally goes. You see? If we're sitting here and I say, okay, everybody think of a mandala, you know, with three concentric circles, with an orange, a green, and then in the middle, very red. Okay, let's do that. Okay. Now I want you to do that for 5 hours. Without flickering. Brandon, I think, can do it. He's getting going. But you see how you get bored. You can be completely bored. But this is what they try to do. You know, think of something. Think of this word that doesn't mean anything to you. You know, it's just not possible. Not only are our minds, you know, upset, but our bodies are not fit for this. The bodies are just Kali Yuga bodies. You know, we've misused them, we haven't done any yoga, the wrong diet is so disturbed, it's disease, that disease. It's impossible. The body is definitely going to give you trouble and impinge on the mind. So this sitting business is not going to work for us. We sit and do japa, that's one thing. But even then, if we can't, we have to walk around, you know. And yet, the process of bhakti yoga, centered on the chanting of the holy name, can break through all the difficulties, negate all the difficulties, and we can become perfect yogis by that process, especially Harinam Sankirtan. It's so wonderful. I realized this years ago that, you know, all right, because I tried, you know, I did a little hatha yoga, you know, baby yoga, and the whole thing, you know, stretching and bending and sitting, right? But then inevitably, maybe 20 minutes in, if you're good at it, you know, the ankle, the knee, you know, something, the back. It just, you know, this it just starts distracting you. It's very difficult. But the dynamic yoga of chanting the holy name and dancing, all right, the body can remain still, move it, but move it in time. Move it in time to the Hare Krishna mantra. But the drum is so important. Drumming is important of controlling the mind. This is something you may not know. Hitler, I hate to end on this note, but this is interesting, that he would have these mass rallies. There's some movies of them. You see in Nuremberg, you know, a million people gathered to hear him speak. He ran everything by the speaking. The radio had been invented, it was prominent, you know. He was able to speak to everyone in Germany. But here we'd have these mass rallies, and during those rallies, you know, the army is there, you know, everyone's attentive, of course, you know. But they would play these drums, the beat, the drum, little drum all the time, to keep the mind, you know, to calm out the mind so that they could hear this, the speech, and it would take root like that. So this rhythm is very important for the mind to be focused. That's why Prabhupada was so ecstatic when the first Madanga came. You know, it helped the kirtan, helped you know, enliven the kirtan. So this chanting is our means of yoga. We should never neglect it. We should be very careful to chant our rounds attentively as possible. Don't neglect the kirtans. Try to chant as much as possible, you know, and be eager for that. That is our means of yoga. And everything flows from that, from fixing the mind on the sound of the holy name. Any final questions or comments? Then we shall adjourn. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.